ハレク
リスナ、ハレクリスナ。
Thank you.
Swami, Shri Prabhupada Nalati, Shri Shri Gaurakai Ki, Shri Shri Radha Madhavan Ki, Shri Jagannath Subhadra Bhagavan Ki, Aur ISKCON Atlanta Yatra Ki, All glory to the Guru, All glory to Guru, All glory to Guru, All glory to Shri Guru Shri Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Welcome everyone to Bhagavatam class. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text 27. This verse has a 3.5 page work of one of the longest work.
Dana dharma, raja dharma,
moksha dharma, vibhagasha dharma.
This is a 3.5-page purport. So instead of reading the whole purport and then commenting, I think it would be better to comment as we read. We may not be able to finish the whole thing today, but...
Part one, part two.
Purport. To give charity is one of the householder's main functions, and he should be prepared to give in charity at least 50% of his household money. A brahmachari or student should perform sacrifice. A householder should give charity. And a person in their retired life or in the renounced order should practice penances in his charity. These are the general functions of all the ashram, or orders of life on the path of self-realization. In the brahmachari life, the training is sufficiently imparted so that one may understand that the world as property belongs to the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. No one therefore can claim to be the proprietor of anything in the world. Therefore, in the life of a householder, which is sort of a license for sense enjoyment, one was given charity for the service of the Lord. Everyone's energy is generated or borrowed from the reservoir of energy of the Lord. Therefore, the resultant actions of such energy must be given to the Lord in the shape of transcendental loving service for Him. As the rivers draw water from the sea, through the clouds, again down to the sea. Similarly, our energy is borrowed from the Supreme Source, the Lord's energy, and it must return to the Lord. This is the perfection of our energy. The Lord, therefore, in Bhagavad Gita says that whatever we do, whatever we undergo as penance, whatever we sacrifice, whatever we eat, whatever we give in charity, must be offered to Him, the Lord. That is a way of utilizing our borrowed energy. When our energy is utilized in this way, our energy is purified from the contamination of material inability, and thus we become fit for our original nature of life, of service to the Lord. Om Agyanatimanandasya
Jnananandana Svataya Chakshurudhanitamnaya
Dasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavishtam Sattamena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadavayam Kadavishwadam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yudhapadakamalam Shri Guru Pāpam Sarajalam Sahagana Raghunatam Tantam Sushiva Sarvetam Sarvutam Parinama Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Vairadha Krishna Vapadam Sahagana Pravita Shri Shri Shatam Sampasa He Krishna Karma Sivu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesh धर्मान विभाग श्री धर्म भगवत धर्म समास He then explained by divisions acts of charity, the pragmatic activities of a king, and activities for salvation. Then he described the duties of women and devotees, both briefly and extensively. So Bhishma Dev is the speaker of this verse, and Bhishma Dev had a great fortune that as he was preparing to leave his body, the Supreme Lord came at his bedside along with the demigods, the Panvas, and the other great sages. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, Yamya Vapi Svaran Bhava. Wherever your mind is at the moment of death, that's where the living entity eventually enters. And Bhishma Dev was a brahmachari. He had received the benediction that he could choose his own moment of departure. And after the battle of Kurukshetra was over and King Yudhishthira was enthralled in the throne, Bhishma Dev thought it fit that now he should get ready to leave his body. Krishna came at his bedside, so he had the fortune of leaving his body while meditating at Krishna's lotus feet. Isn't that fortunate? So if we were to ask any of you or all of you, would you like to be in a similar position?
Yes.
That when you leave your body, you're meditating on Krishna's lotus feet?
Yes.
Okay. You think it's going to happen?
Yes.
Yeah. You think Krishna, the Panvas, the demigods are also going to come at your bedside? Yes? No? Okay. Now Prabhupada offers you the solution. Prabhupada says in the purport, and in other words, that if you're hearing the holy name or hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam while leaving the body, then you will get the same benefit that Bhishma Dev derived due to the presence of the Lord at his bedside. What a powerful purport. If you're hearing the Bhagavatam or the holy name, then that's the same as Krishna being physically present right next to you. So this highlights the importance of the holy name. So, Krishna inspired Yudhishthira Maharaj to ask Bhishma Dev questions about the goal of life. Krishna himself could have given the instructions. After all, who knows higher than Krishna? Mata Paratram Nanya. There's no truth higher than me. So who has better knowledge than Krishna? But Krishna wanted to show to the world that my devotee, even if he's seemingly in a difficult position, he is perfectly sound in mind. Our Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows. You step on a thorn and you have to limp for some time. But here was Bhishma Dev lying on a bed of arrows. But Krishna wanted to glorify him. Lord wants to glorify the devotee wants to glorify the Lord. And in order to prove to the world that my devotee is always sound in mind, Krishna inspired Yudhishthira. Ask Bhishma Dev, what are the duties of individuals in different orders of life? Also, we saw in Prabhupada's case a very close parallel. And Prabhupada was getting ready to leave his body. Maturely, it appeared that he was in an inconvenient position. But he was still translating the Srimad Bhagavatam and giving instructions. Krishna wanted to show that my devotee is always mentally sound and clear. So Krishna inspired Yudhishthira to ask Vishnu Dev, what are the duties of individuals in different classes. What's the duty of a brahmachari? What's the duty of a grihastha? What's the duty of a vanaprastha? What's the duty of a sannyasi? All these are nicely explained in the scriptures. In fact, in the scriptures, we virtually have information on everything that one may desire to know. We just have to have faith and turn to the scriptures for guidance. Here we have Vishnudev explaining what should be the duties of individuals in different varnas and ashramas. In the purport, Prabhupada says, the duties of to give charity is one of the household's main functions. So in the purport we read, as I said, we just read one big paragraph. Prabhupada has summarized the duties of the four ashrams. For example, Prabhupada says, a brahmacharya student should perform sacrifices. A brahmacharya student, a brahmacharya is characteristic, nicely described in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. A brahmacharya should control his senses and he should engage in missionary charitable work for the benefit of humanity. Preach, which is the highest service one can do. A householder, Prabhupada says, must give charity. And over here, Prabhupada talks about 50%. Yesterday we were revealing the story of Kalavaja Sridhar, who was a very ordinary businessman, very simple. Selling, what was he selling?
Banana
peels. And he had a meager income of a few paisas a month. Still he would spend 50% in service of the Ganges. The point is, a household must give in charity. Now there are different types of charity that one can perform. In the 18th chapter, text 5 of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, three things should never be given up. What are they? Yajna, dana, and tapa. And Krishna says, even the self-realized should not give it up. It's not that one says, oh, now I am at the Paramahansa state. I don't have to conform to these guidelines. Krishna makes it very clear that even those are advanced in the poet. So what does Krishna say? Yajna dana tapasya. So there are different types of charity that one can engage in. But what is the highest charity? Giving people knowledge of God, enlightening the suffering souls, or the importance of human life. Let's take, for example, that I'm a strong believer in philanthropic work. Philanthropic work is very common, especially in third world countries. People think that it's more important to give money for mundane welfare work rather than uplifting people's character. So let's say we do that. We give mundane charity. We get someone operated, we pay for someone's cataract operation, we give them material education, etc. But if after recovery, the person doesn't engage in the Lord, serve it to the Lord, but continues with this nonsense, sense gratification, then have you helped him or have you engaged in him further?
Engaged.
Because when we engage in activities against the laws of God, then you are doing nothing but accumulating a debt that you have to pay. Just like if you are doing a business, you take a bank loan. The bank gives you an overdraft facility. Okay, you can draw up $1 million. So similarly, we have an overdraft facility. You can go on sinning as much as you want. The overdraft keeps getting extended. But eventually,
compassion for everything. So, one is intelligent. Say, why should I engage them in money and welfare work which will just bind them further to the samsara or birth and death? Better I give them knowledge about God so that they can understand and resolve that I must give up this nonsense activity. Therefore, the highest charity that we're going to engage in is giving people knowledge about God. It's giving people knowledge about the importance of devotional service. It's making people realize that engaging in sense gratification is not in one's best interest, because even though you may pursue this path, in the end there is no satisfaction. Therefore, devotees of this movement engage in preaching work. Preaching work takes on various forms. You have Harinam, that's also a strong preaching organ. Then you have preaching, and then you have book distribution. Prabhupada encouraged us to do book distribution. Why? Because this is the highest form of charity that one can possibly engage in. There is no charity higher than this. Why did Prabhupada labor so hard to write these books? Our acharyas have recommended this activity of preaching to my children. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the first great acharya who sent his book on the life of Lord Chaitanya to universities around the world. Prior to 1896, the year that Prabhupada appeared on the planet, the printing industry had hardly developed. As soon as the printing industry developed, it became possible to print several copies of the same book. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in 1896, wrote a book on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and he sent it to universities around the world. And he was a great visionary. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had predicted everything that is happening today. He had predicted that a day would come when in Sridhar Mayapur, devotees from England, Russia, America, etc., would come and chant and dance along with the locals. He had supported Lord Chaitanya's prediction that the holy name would be chanted in every town and village of the world. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has similarly also sent his book to universities around the world. And he in turn instructed Bhakti Sinanadi on the importance of book printing and book distribution. And Prabhupada took this very seriously to heart. Prabhupada encouraged distribution of transcendental knowledge as the highest form of charity. He personally labored hard to translate and distribute these books, and he instructed his followers by saying, if you want to please me, distribute my books. Why? Because these books contain transcendental knowledge that can save us from the samsara of birth and death. That is the Vaishnava's desire, para dukha dukhi. Seeing others in distress, he also becomes distressed. So the highest form of charity that we can perform is giving people transcendental knowledge. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started a Sankirtan movement in Navadvipa. And one day he called his devotees and said, Haridas, Nityananda, you go house to house in Navadvipa and beg everyone for the following message. What was the message? Bolo Krishna, Vaja Krishna, Kura Krishna Sishya. Chant the names of Krishna. Bolo Krishna. Vaja Krishna, worship Krishna. And Kura Krishna Sishya. And embrace, accept, practice Krishna's instructions as revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And Nityananda and Haridas took this very seriously. They were thinking that if we can elevate The most fallen of this town, the Lord Gauranga's glory would be enhanced. Nityananda and Haridas knew beyond doubt the Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But by the Yoga Maya potency of the Lord, when the Lord appears, even his closest associates do not know his real identity. In fact, if they discover his real identity, then the fear would be gone. Just like if Yashoda Mata knew that Krishna, her son, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she would have no fear of Krishna being attacked or killed or whatever. But she was always anxiety about her son's welfare because she didn't know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She would be suspected that my son seems to have special benedictions from Narayana, but she didn't know. So when the Lord appears, his closest associates do not always know that here is the Supreme Lord. So the highest form of charity, so Nityananda and Haridas Thakur, they knew Lord Chaitanya's real identity. So as they were doing a survey, like we do survey these days, with these things, we do a survey on almost everything. So they also did a survey. Who is the most fallen individual in town? And they came to understand. The two brothers who were born in Brahminical families, who came from very opulent background. But these two brothers have been thrown out of the house because they became degraded, indulged in almost everything sinful. And when they were intoxicated, so their family had no alternative to tell them, shape up, forget up. So they decided not to shape up. They had to leave the house. And they became great debauchees. You know, that's what they say in Kanpur, isn't it? Shape up or get up. So that's what the family members did. And that's why Nityananda Haridas, they thought, if only we could save these two degraded individuals, then people would see how great Lord Chaitanya is. So the desire of a devotee is to save the conditioned souls at the cost of personal inconvenience. When Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda and Haridas Thakur were preaching house to house, they went house to house in Navadvipa 500 years ago. It's not that every house they went to gave them a good reception. Some houses they went to, the people said, oh, how fortunate we are. These great sage sannyasis have come to our house to purify us. Please sit down. What can we do for you? Chant Hare Krishna, sure. And they coughed. Some houses they went to, people wouldn't even open their doors. They would say, when we try to get a glimpse of Lord Chaitanya doing sankirtan in the house of Srivas Thakur, you people didn't let us come in. When Lord Chaitanya started a sankirtan movement and Srivas Angam, only his most confidential devotees were allowed to come in. Because the Lord was exhibiting various symptoms and ecstasies which could not be understood by a common man. So the Lord had only permitted his confidential devotees to come. And as a result, those who were not allowed became very bitter. So many people were not allowed in. So many homes they went, they would say, when we wanted to come in and witness your sankirtan, you did not let us. Now you can't come in. And some houses that they went to, people said, these are not sannyasis. They are thieves dressed up as sannyasis. And they're coming just to see what we have in the house. And then they'll come late in the night and plunder her. So they would say they're thieves. And when people would call Onandinanda and Haridas thieves, they would just laugh at them. So the point we're making is, even when the Lord was preaching, it's not that everyone wholeheartedly supported it. Some supported it, some did not. So when we preach, that's the type of expectation you can have. Some may respond, some may not respond. But a preacher doesn't get discouraged, just like when the audience go to do book distribution. Our intention is that everyone may become liberated and fortunate to take the devotional service. But it's not that everyone you approach to, you're going to say, yeah, give me a book. It's not that people are going to line up in queues and, like they line up in one of liquor shops. Come on, I want a book. Some may respond, some may not. But our endeavor is to try and preach. So there are various types of charity, and the highest charity is giving people knowledge of God. So Prabhupada had explained in this purport briefly, Brahmachari duties is to control the mind and senses. Six canto describe in detail how a Brahmachari should act. Then the householder's duty, householder may live with the family, but his ultimate goal should also be to give in charity. And one may give in charity according to one's means, but one should give in charity. So vanaprastha ashram, one gradually gets more attached, and the sannyasa ashram, one totally dedicates his body, mind and words in service to the Supreme Lord. So, and Prabhupada makes a point, quoting text 27 from the 9th chapter of the Gita, yat karoshi yat dasnasi, yat dhavasi dhidasi yat, yat tapasudhi kantya, yat karusha vadapana. Whichever you do, whichever offering you do, or do it as an offering unto me. So, the point is, in the sannyas and one of the stages, one should be totally dedicated to the mission of the Lord. And Prabhupada makes the point, the perfection is that we offer our energy in service to the Supreme Lord. When our energy is utilized in the service of the Lord, then one becomes free from the reaction. And we gave this example yesterday of the lotus feet on the water, but not touched by the water. That is Krishna consciousness. We live in the material world. It's not that we tell people, come on, we will give up everything in the material world, come to the forest. You will live in the material world, live as a man of the world, but there must be internal attachment to Krishna and detachment from everything that's material. And there must be the recognition that we must dedicate everything in service to the Lord. And that recognition and realization comes by the practice of Bhakti Yoga. Further, Prabhupada says, we'll proceed to the next paragraph. Raja Dharma is a great science. Unlike modern diplomacy or political supremacy, the kings were trained systematically to become munificent and not merely be tax collectors. They were trained to perform different sacrifices only for the prosperity of the subject. To lead the praja to the attainment of salvation was a great duty of the king, the father, the spiritual master, and the king, and not to become irresponsible in the matter of leading their subjects to the path of ultimate liberation from birth, death, disease, and old age. When these primary duties are properly discharged, there is no need of government of the people by the people. Who gave the famous definition, Abraham Lincoln. In modern days, the people in general occupy the administration by the strength of manipulative votes. But they were never trained in the primary duties of the king and this is also not possible for everyone. Under these circumstances, the untrained administrators play havoc to make the subjects happy in all respects. On the other hand, these untrained administrators gradually become rogues and thieves. Their taxation to finance the top-heavy administration that is useless for all purposes. Thank you, the qualified brahmanas are meant to give direction to the kings for proper administration in terms of the scriptures like the Manu Samhita and Dharma Shastra. A typical king is the idol of the people in general, and the king aspires religious, chivalrous, and munificent. The citizens generally follow him. Such a king is not a lazy, sensuous person living in the cause of the subject, but always alert to kill thieves and decoys. The pious king was not merciful to decoys and thieves in the name of nonsensical ahimsa. The thieves and decoys are punished in an exemplary way, so that in future no one will dare commit such nuisance in an organized form. Such human decoys were never meant for administration as they are now. So as we said, Prabhupada has a 3.5-page purport to this verse. So we are reading paragraph by paragraph. So here, Bhishmadev, Prabhupada is commenting on Bhishmadev's statement of Raja Dharma. Because, as we said earlier, Yudhishthira Maharaj's eye has asked Bhishmadev, please pay the duties of individuals in varnas and ashramas. So, what is the duty of Raja Dharma? Everyone has to have administration, isn't it? You may have different systems of administration, like some countries have what they call democracy, some have autocracy. Some have dictatorship, some have communism. And Prabhupada quotes the famous definition of democracy of Abraham Lincoln, government of the people, for the people, by the people. Practically it's become government of the fools, for the fools, by the people. So anyway, and democracy is to be called, Prabhupada is called democracy. So, ideally, but there has to be some type of administration. So the Vedic concept is spiritual monarchy. The monarch is there, but he is a spiritualist. Not like the present day monarchs or rulers who have no spirituality in them. And what's happening today? People with corrupt backgrounds, criminal backgrounds, get manipulated and run for office and get elected. And get elected, that's the beauty. Because society itself is so degraded that people don't know what should be the higher form of life. Of course, in some parts of the world, in the developed countries of the world, they do have a higher sense of standards. But nevertheless, the point remains that even in most parts of the world, people become kings, rulers, but they do not know what their duty is. In the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, read about the hellish planets. Have any of you read that?
Yeah.
So in the hellish planets, Shukadeva Swami explains the different types of suffering that await us for different types of crimes that we may have committed. So what happens to somebody who gets elected to a position of responsibility, becomes a president, prime minister, king? What happens? But he uses this position just to get intoxicated. Sense enjoyment. And what happens? After death, Such an individual is squeezed through a machine, like a sugar cane is squeezed through a machine. Isn't there, you see people squeezing the sugar cane to extract people. So after death, they get squeezed through a machine where they experience such great pain. So we should not think that it doesn't matter as long as I get elected or become a minister or power, whatever, and I do not use it to give people spiritual guidance, then you have to take on the reaction. Become a leader, but a leader has to be exemplary. And this is not just limited to the political affairs of the world. Even in a spiritual institution like ours, the leaders have to be exemplary. If the leaders are not exemplary, then that's a contrary to what Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya wanted. Lord Chaitanya said, a white dot on a black dot on a white sheet can be identified from a distance. So Lord Chaitanya was very strict. Prabhupada Chaitanya told Haridas, some preach but do not practice. And some practice, but do not preach. But you are simultaneously doing both. So, a leader has to be exemplary, pure, in a spiritual organization, and his conduct stands for purity. And in the mature world, if one becomes a head of state and doesn't give guidance to the society about the importance of human life, then that king or head of state will have to take on, share the sinful reaction due to all the individuals because of the sins that they have committed. So it is a great responsibility to assume a position of responsibility. And a typical king must have Brahminical advisors. In a Vedic concept, the kings had Brahminical advisors, just like the famous Chanakya Pandit. Chanakya Pandit was a Brahminical advisor. He was an advisor to King Chandragupta. And Chandragupta told the Chanakya Pandit, you're a man of such great wisdom. I will build a nice house for you to live, a nice palace. Chanakya said, I don't want any comforts. If I take any favors from you, I'll be obliged to say yes to everything. So he said, I'll live in a hut so I can retain my individuality. So a true Brahmin doesn't take favors. And then what does a true ruler do? A true ruler sees that the God conscious, that the country is God conscious. Like, very soon, on April the 8th, you're going to celebrate Ram Navami. So people still talk about Ram Rajya, isn't it?
Yes.
People, why do people talk about Ram Rajya? Because Ram Rajya was a period when everybody was God conscious. The weather was perfect. Even death did not come till he wanted it. And everyone was happy. But the main reason why everyone was happy and was Lord Ram was an idol king. He was exemplary in every factor. He was about to be called the king. But his father got reminded by one of his wives, he had three wives, that's right. And on one occasion, they gave Kakai a promise that anything she wants, he would fulfill. And Kakai had a desire that her son may be coronated instead of Ram. But she held back the desire till the appropriate time. And when Ram was about to be coronated, when the streets of Ayodhya were all decorated and illuminated, she reminded her husband. You remember, you owe me a promise. Yes, I owe you a promise. Yes, please send your son Ram in exile for 13 years. She was very clever. She said, if he goes into exile just for a few years, then he will come back and do a coup d'etat. So send him out for a longer period. And Lord Ram himself was so conscientious that he would even go in disguise to see that everyone was happy. So a king or head of state must be God-conscious. Therefore, the concept was Raj Rishi. Raja and Rishi at the same time. And if you're Raja and Rishi at the same time, then society will be prosperous. In the Bhagavatam, we read the story of King Vena, how he was godless. He stopped all the sacrifices. He had the homes of Brahmanas burnt. And what happened? Because all yajnas were stopped, society became unbearable. All the necessities of life were not there. The rivers, oceans were drying up. There was no water. The earth wasn't producing grains. The trees were not producing fruits. And as a result, there was general suffering. And when his son Prithu became the king, he instructed everyone to become God conscious. And as a result, all the necessities of life were provided. So we see a similar thing developing. You see the global climatic changes. You see the world is running out of many resources, especially countries like India. They are virtually water-starved, and it's going to get worse. Why? So many sinful activities are being performed. Innocent cows are being killed, etc. So when we engage in activities against the laws of God, there is reaction. So the duty of a head of state is not only to extract taxes, the Prabhupada explains in the following parable, taxes will be there. These days nobody wants to pay taxes, isn't it?
Right.
Everybody has tax consultants. And what do tax consultants do? Tell you how to hide your taxes. Of course, they have what they call a parallel black economy. Besides black economy, the legal way they'll help you hide taxes. But because nobody wants to pay taxes. And even if you pay taxes, most of the tax money doesn't go to the public. 80-90% of them gets used up in protecting the so-called thieves of society when they become rulers. So ultimately, the citizens don't get any benefit. Whereas in the Vedic concept, 25% of your income would voluntarily be submitted to the government. And the king would not spend a penny out of that for his own welfare. The entire 25% would be spent on the welfare of the citizen. Here's what the proper way. The tax law was simple. There was no force, no encroachment. The king had the right to take 1/4 of the production made by the subject. The king had the right to claim 1/4 of one's allotted wealth. One can never grudge parting with it, because due to the pious king and religious harmony, there was enough natural wealth, namely, what is natural wealth? Namely, listen to this, grains, fruits, flowers, syrup, cotton, milk, jewels, minerals, etc. And therefore no one was materially happy. So namely, grains. So, of course, America is blessed with a lot of grains. But in America, America and California, etc., you're having drought right now.
Yeah.
So you have drought. And many other parts of the world, like India, far more serious. Then fruits. Fruits are also in short supply. Flowers, silk, cotton, milk. Unfortunately, the cows are not being protected, and the cows are, people use all serious, and they use all devices to increase my production. Now we have a new concept in this concept, not a new concept, but it's going to promote the milk. And as cows are trained, are protected, it's not like in the present day society. Extract as much milk as you can get from the cow. Another cow can't give any more milk. Send it to the slaughter. So that is very undesirable. And the cow must be fully protected. But then if you're going to fully protect the cow, then actually the cost of milk is going to go up. So now in ISKCON we've started with ahimsa milk. Our Gita Nagari farm is offering ahimsa milk. And we people angry to pay a higher price. But in turn, the cows from where the milk is coming are guaranteed that they're not going to be sent to the slaughterhouse. So in many places, like in England and all, devotees are only taking ahimsa milk. You know. So anyway, the point is, the cow must be protected. The citizens were rich in agriculture and animal husbandry, and therefore they had enough grain, food, and milk, without any artificial means, needs of soap and toilets, cinemas and bars. The king had to see that the reserved energy of humanity was properly utilized. Human energy is not meant, for fulfilling animal propensities, but for self-realization. The whole government was specially designed to fulfill this particular purpose. As such, the king had to select properly the cabinet ministers, but not on the strength of voting background. The ministers, the military commanders, and even the ordinary soldiers were all selected by personal qualifications, and the king had to supervise them properly before they were appointed to their respective posts. The king was specially vigilant to see that the tapasvis or persons who sacrificed everything for disseminating spiritual knowledge were never disregarded. The king knew well that the Supreme Self of Godhead never tolerates any insults to his unalived devotees. Such tapasvis were trusted leaders even of the rogues and thieves who would never disobey the order of the tapasvis. The king would give special protection to illiterates, the helpless, and wisdom of the state. Defense measures were arranged previous to any attack by the enemies. The taxing process was easy and was not meant for squandering, but was for strengthening the reserve fund. The soldiers were recruited from all parts of the world and they were trained for special duty. So Prabhupada's further elaborating on the king's duties. The king was God-conscious and he would select people as ministers who were fully qualified. Not that, like in some countries, like India, where you have to have people representing different communities. And even you have people who are properly qualified and who had character. Not that you be a debauchee and still become a leader. So, what is an ideal form of government? That's also nicely explained in that Srimad Bhagavatam. As far as salvation is concerned, one has to conquer the principles of lust, anger, unlawful desires, avarice, and bewilderment. To get freedom from anger, one should learn how to forgive. To be free from unlawful desires, one should not make plans. By spiritual culture, one is able to conquer sleep. By tolerance, one can conquer desire and avarice. Disturbances from various diseases can be avoided by regulated diets. By self-control, what a purport that was written. It's such a sweet purport, isn't it?
Yes.
Covers the entire philosophy. By self-control, one can be free from false hopes, and money can be saved by avoiding undesirable associations. By practice of yoga, one can control hunger, and worldliness can be avoided by cultivating the knowledge of impermanence. Dizziness can be conquered by rising up, and false arguments can be conquered by factual ascertainment. Talkativeness can be avoided by gravity and silence, and by prowess one can avoid fearfulness. Perfect knowledge can be obtained by self-realization. One will be free from lust, avarice, anger, dreaming, etc., to factually attain the path of salvation. So, if you want salvation, you have to pay the price. It's not that you get initiated with a secret mantra and your salvation is guaranteed. Salvation means freedom from the samsara, birth and death. Of course, in a higher sense, a devotee doesn't care whether Krishna sends into hell or heaven. But generally, salvation means becoming free from birth and death. But if you want to become free from birth and death, then give up the anarthas. Last time you read and we hated, etc. Give up these, overcome these anarthas. Then you can overcome one being, the evil influences and become eligible to go to the kingdom of God. Now, how do you become free from anger? Prabhupada explains, to become free from anger, learn to forgive. Forgiveness is a very important characteristic of a Vaishnava. Look at Yudhishthira Maharaj's example. After the battle of Kurukshetra was over, Dhritarashtra met Yudhishthira. Dhritarashtra and his sons had conspired to kill the Pandavas at any cost. They tried everything under the sun. But Yudhishthira, instead, if he wanted, he could have arrested Dhritarashtra. Come on, you tried to kill me, now I'm in power. Come on, I'm going to hang you. Rather, what did he say? He said, my dear uncle, I'm sorry you lost all your relatives. Please take this big palace to live in. I'll give you a palace, servants, everything. And Dhritarashtra was so attached to the conveniences offered that he thought at last my royal ambitions are realized. Till Vidura came and instructed him what the importance of devotional service and detachment. So, generally we become angry. You're angry at someone, you become angry when you don't get what you want or when you don't like someone or someone. But if you have a forgiving nature, then you can easily overcome anger. So Prabhupada says, to get salvation, eliminate the influence of the anarthas, and to get freedom from anger, one must learn how to forgive. Then to get free from unlawful desires, then we have unlimited material desires. They can be overcome by the power of devotional service. And by spiritual culture, you can control sleep. In other words, generally, people love to sleep, isn't it? But one of the big diseases in America is most people can't fall asleep, so they have to take medicine and so on. Whereas on the other hand, if you're engaged in devotional service, then sleep is not much of a problem. Devotees fall asleep even in the Bible. Because if you're engaged actively in serving the Lord, that seems not a problem. So, Prabhupada says over here, what is spiritual culture? Spiritual culture means getting up in the morning for Mangalarati. Coming for Mangalarati, coming to class and so on. So, with spiritual culture, you can conquer sleep. By tolerance, you can conquer desires and avarice. So, Lord Chaitanya encourages us to be extremely tolerant. Tolerance has to be practiced at two levels, internal and external. Externally, When I engage in service to the Lord, at times you may be humiliated, insulted. You may have to preach in difficult circumstances. You may have to walk in snow to distribute books in the December marathon in Russia, in Moscow alone. They distributed 65,000 big books.
Haribo.
And they distributed them all one-to-one, walking on the streets of Moscow in heavy snow.
Wow.
It was snowing in the community, and still, and the only thing going on in big book
distribution.
Haribo. So that is tolerance, if you follow. You tolerate. But then there is internal tolerance. The senses are always agitating. That too has to be tolerated. Not that the senses are agitating, and I become a slave of the senses. So, Prabhupada says, by tolerance, you can conquer desires and avarice. So, by developing tolerance, internal and external, you can automatically also control your senses. Disturbances of various diseases can be avoided by regulated diets. So if you analyze the cause of most of the diseases today, you will see that the cause of most of the diseases are twofold. One is bad habits and bad eating habits. Not being regulated and eating what is undesirable. And that in turn causes most of the diseases. If on the other hand, you are leading a highly regulated, disciplined life, then there's a good chance you can save yourself from these diseases. By self-control, one can be free from false hopes, and money can be saved by avoiding undesirable associations. Once a devotee came up to me, I saw the devotee, and he said, "Maharaj, since I've become a devotee, my expenses have gone down by half." I said, "Very good, how?" He said, "Now I just go home to office to temple. Previously, I would go to clubs, play golf, and go dining, and this and that." So that's the fact. One of the gains or benefits of Krishna consciousness is you save money also, and you can donate to Krishna. So Prabhupada makes the point. He makes the point by avoiding undesirable. Money can be saved by avoiding undesirable association. So if you are Krishna conscious, if you are in the right association, then automatically you also get saved from bad habits. Bad habits cost money, they don't come free, do they? Krishna consciousness comes free. But bad habits cost money. So you can save yourself from bad habits, from money, by having the right association. Talkativeness can be avoided with gravity and silence. People love doing prajalpa, you know, talking. Dale Carnegie wrote that famous book, How to Make Friends and Influence People. And one of the main themes he emphasizes is just be a good listener. Because people love to talk. But here Prabhupada says that talkativeness can be avoided with gravity and silence. So gravity and silence. Silence for a devotee means what? Silence for a devotee means talking only Krishna katha. Just like Jad Bharat, he was pretending as if he was deaf and dumb. But when the need arose, he spoke like a lion and he woke up King Ruga to the reality. So a devotee is by nature grave, silent. But when it comes to Krishna consciousness, he preaches like a lion. Once a female devotee asked Prabhupada, "How can I be humble and still distribute books at the same time?" But when you distribute books, you have to be a little aggressive. So she said, "How can I be humble and distribute books at the same time?" So Prabhupada said, "When you're at home, you be a lamb. But when you go out to preach, you should be like a lion." So a lamb at home and a lion outside. So don't become a lion at home and a lamb outside. So, when you go out to preach, you naturally have to be a little aggressive. So talkativeness should be avoided. Silence for a devotee means using the tongue to talk for the Lord. And perfect knowledge can be obtained by self-cultivation. So perfect knowledge is the knowledge of self-discipline. And one can be free from the anarthas by engaging in devotional service. As far as women class are concerned, they are accepted as a power of inspiration for men. As such, women are more powerful than men. Mighty Julius Caesar was controlled by Cleopatra. Such powerful women are controlled by shyness. Therefore, shyness is important for women. Once this control is loosened, women can gain havoc in society by adultery. Adultery means production of unwanted children, known as Varna Sanskar, who disturb the world. So, the woman in society must be protected. And one of the characteristics of a woman is shyness. Not that, like today's society, where they want equal rights and so on. Woman is always protected, according to the Vedas. The last item taught by Bhishmadev, when the process of pleasing the Lord, we are all eternal servants of the Lord, and we forget this essential part of our nature. We are put into material conditions of life. The simple process of pleasing the Lord, for the household especially, is to install the deity of the Lord at home. By concentrating on the deity, one may progressively go on with a daily routine work. Worshipping the deity at home, serving the devotee, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, reciting the holy place, and chanting the holy name of the Lord are all inexpensive items by which one can please the Lord. Does it cost any money to chant? Does it cost any money to worship the deity? So Prabhupada said, they're all inexpensive items by which one can please the Lord. That's the subject matter was explained by the grandfather to his grandchildren. So, Prabhupada's making the point in concluding, especially the householders, they should have deities at home, especially the deities of Gonitai are very merciful. And if you have deities at home, you train up the children in how to worship the deity, everything you eat, you offer to the Lord. But of course, this should be done in such a manner that it doesn't reduce your involvement in the temple. So, Bhishmadev is instructing Yudhishthira Maharaj about the duties of individuals in the different varna ashram. And why is he doing it? Because inspired by the Lord, Yudhishthira Maharaj asks Bhishmadev, what are the duties of different classes of men? So, the Srimad Bhagavatam offers us information and everything. And Prabhupada's purpose make the slokas more meaningful, easy to digest, easy to understand. Therefore, when we study the Bhagavatam, we not only read the verses, but we also study the purpose. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any questions? Yes,
Prabhupada. You mentioned in the purport about the king and the reactions from the citizens. Does that principle apply to this kind of excluding the spiritual masters? Because, of course, we have to take reactions from the disciples, but what about GBC members and temple presidents? Do they also...
Good question. We may have to do research on this. Yeah, we all do take on reaction. Somebody knows that some wrong is being done. Like a spiritual master becomes the enemy of the disciple if he doesn't correct the disciple when he's doing something wrong. A father becomes the enemy when he doesn't correct if the son is doing something wrong. I mean, he may try and the son may not respond. A spiritual master may try and the disciple may not respond. But at least he should do his duty and try. And if you get elected to, or if you are nominated to a position of responsibility and you don't use it correctly, then certainly you have to pay the karma. Nobody in the world is karma free. One thing is, you know, like calorie-free diet. There's no such thing as karma-free diet. There's no such thing as karma-free action. Every action has karma along with it. So if you get elected to a position of, if you are, let's say, a GBC, a temple president or this or that, and you're not working honestly in that capacity, you will have taken all the reaction, just like the materialists who engage in sense enjoyment, will eventually have to pay for it. Nothing is, but unfortunately, the power of illusion is so strong that it blinds us to say, you'll see. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, thank you for the nice class. So in the beginning, Maharaj, you were talking about the philanthropic activities, no? So there was a little confusion there, like, so ISKCON currently like has so many philanthropic activities, like midday meals for the poor kids, hospitals and all, no? Different services devotees do. So, like, is that like what you were talking about, the philanthropic activities?
No, like, let's say we do a lot of food distribution in India, Africa, many countries. The food we're distributing is 100% prasad. The midday meal that we offer to, we're serving in India over 20 lakh children a day. But what we serve is first offer to the Lord. So I think when they eat, they get some benefit. We have a few hospitals which are catering to the devotees. And we use these avenues for opportunity to preach. We're not doing any activity with just mundane charity. The highest charity is giving people knowledge of God. And the highest is book distribution. Keep doing that all your life. I'll give more questions.
So what is the role of devotees in the current political system? We should be isolated from the political system, or we should be involved?
You're talking India, America, which part of the world?
Anyway, I think most of them are democracy, I guess, now.
Well, there is no democracy, maybe. In America, there's some democracy, but the American system is reserved for those who can have a lot of money. Otherwise, you don't stand a chance in America, am I right?
Absolutely.
Unless you're a world good fund collector. So, and countries like India, there's no real democracy. People are so corrupt. In the time of voting, they go and get free liquor. There's no real democracy. Therefore, Prabhupada called this demon crazy. There's no real democracy anywhere in the world today. In India, there's one type of law. In the American and the Western concept of democracy, there is relatively